Spirit of Thunder.
Yay, Jesus.
Okay. 5 steps of Jesus.
I don't want to start making cynical jokes right now.
Yeah, it's too early for the podcast to make cynical jokes.
All right, you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, let me slurp.
That should be our intro. Or that should be our outro. That should be our outro.
Let me slurp. Alright.
No, you actually just slurp. Like, that's how we end. Alright, well then.
See you later. That's disgusting.
That's gross.
Have you ever been to a coffee tasting?
No. Does that sound like something I would go to, Chris?
I don't know. That's actually what they have you do. Is they put, like, lay out, like, 6 coffees for you, and you're supposed to take a spoonful and just slurp. Which is funny when you have, like, 10 or 12, you know, professional individuals all slurping from spoons together. All right. Okay.
All right.
All right. Welcome to Tear Gas and Gumdrops, the podcast about the sweetness and pain of mission and ministry. My name is Chris Morton, coming to you from Austin, Texas. Gloomy, rainy Austin, Texas.
And I'm Kyle Sepp, coming to you from Antioch, California, kind of overcast and chilly.
Yeah, what is winter like in Antioch?
It's hit or miss. Yeah. Some years are wintry. Other years are, you know, like a week. It's technically the rainy season, but we've been in a drought for like a decade.
Right.
So I wouldn't really say that, you know, it's a rainy season lately.
Weather.
Yeah. Weather.
This is what you're... It's a free podcast, people. What do you expect?
Yeah. I'm not a weatherman. I don't speak... You don't listen to this for my thoughts on weather.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and we're recording this, you know, this will be released later. So we're recording this in mid-January, which is like the 2 cold weeks in Austin. And then it'll be 110 degrees the rest of the year. So
yeah.
I'm not really complaining that much. I'll spend the rest of the year complaining. Today we're talking about, I don't know, how do we say this? How about this? The top 10 ways to do mission and ministry without killing your spiritual life.
Good way of doing it.
Is that a good title?
Sure. Did we have the conversation? Because is this the response to the text message I sent you about how I wanted to start, why I wanted to start having this conversation? Did I tell you what I was doing when
no,
I thought of this?
No, you just said, here's an idea. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I was talking to loyal listener Paul Cartwright.
Ah, yes. And, who gave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Thank you so much,
yeah,
Paul.
5 stars. Thank you, Paul. Paul is the nicest person in the world.
He's a hug. I think we said that before.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway. And I'm talking about, I'm doing a lot of preaching at my mm-hmm. church these days. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about a series on spiritual growth and just the concept of who was responding to the idea that people come to church to be fed. And I was reflecting, okay, so who feeds the minister?
Mm-hmm.
And which is something I think we're getting better at doing as just a group of people thinking about how we can take care of our leaders and support them. I hope so too. So that's how this kind of all came about, because I think leaders need to be fed just as much as members do, if not more so, because they got to do their teaching and whatnot.
Yeah, and that's interesting, because I think there's a time, and there are definitely other people I know who are like, oh, you don't go to church to be fed, and then they'll start, you know, preaching about how we need to be involved and participate and blah, blah. It's not the role, you know, you're not. There's a lot of people who use that as a chance to complain about, what's the word I'm looking for? Consumerism. Spirit, you know, church's consumerism.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't know. I've had the crap beat out of me a few times and found great solace in listening to a podcast or hiding in the back of a church where I'm not in charge of something. And thank God for those moments that I get fed.
Yeah. Well, and let's say that there are seasons where that is more true than some other seasons. Where the season that you're always in, then perhaps you're pursuing a more vampiric Christianity, as I think, is that a Dallas Willard phrase?
Probably, and if not, if not, we'll retroactively assign it to Dallas.
I'm pretty sure someone else came up with it, but they should give it to Dallas Willard. He's dead, and you know, he deserves all good things.
All good things. And according to your theology of when new life begins, he's already experiencing that, or he's experiencing nothing.
Oh, good point. Good point. Okay.
All right. So,
he's already experiencing that or experiencing nothing.
those are the two options, best I can tell. But come on, we all are.
Let's go on. Let's just go on.
Yeah, let's just, okay. Let's just kind of ping back and forth here about what do you got? What are some ways that you suggest?
All right. Well, let's start. I think this might be the hardest one for any minister or anybody trying to follow Jesus. And that is, we need to set healthy boundaries.
Okay.
And so there are, you know, there are work times. But there should also be times for unwinding. Mm-hmm. There should be times for your family if you are married. Mm-hmm. There should be times for dates with your wife or girlfriend. Or if you're still looking, you should still be looking. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some times where members can't get a hold of me, where my phones are turned off, my email is not checked, and you know, those are my family times. Those are my time to kind of refresh myself. And it's about learning to say no to the wrong things, or just learning to say no to some things so that you can say yes to the best things. And part of that also, I think, is not just saying no, but perhaps saying not right now, or saying let's find somebody who can step into that. So delegating, I think, is also a part of having boundaries. And what I struggle with in this is that there's a risk to it, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're setting boundaries, you are risking an opportunity. You might miss something. And honestly, sometimes I think you will miss things. Like, the story that I tell my friends, is back in 2010, my wife and I had this like 8-week long period where we hadn't really gotten to see each other very much. We finally found a weekend where we weren't doing anything Friday night, and we had a church birthday party on Saturday. So Friday night through till noon on Saturday, my phone was turned off and her phone was turned off, and no one could get a hold of us. Saturday morning, our worship minister died, and I had a number of people trying to get a hold of me for, you know, to let me know and all of that jazz. And, you know, having my phone on would not have stopped his death.
Sure.
And I think you can look at it, you could take it from the fact, well, I missed an opportunity to be a part of that whole thing with some people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there wasn't really much I could speak into that situation to begin with. Wow. And it was really, it also gave an opportunity to other people to minister to his wife, to minister to other people. And I think that's a good thing. I think boundaries help us learn to share. So there is a risk that you miss some things, and some things are going to be risked. But at the same time, God is in control, and we're not. And that's something we need to recognize, particularly as people who can so easily get pulled into this whole Messiah complex of, well, this person saved me and that person saved me. Well, that person was the tool, the vehicle by which the Spirit moved, but ultimately all of that came to God and came from God. So boundaries, good things.
Jeez. You know, I remember vaguely you talking about that happening, but I hadn't heard that story before, and that's pretty powerful, because that is the worst case scenario kind of story. And what you're saying is that, listen, I've seen the worst case scenario, And I'm still glad I had my phone off.
Yeah, because, you know, you can't speak into hypotheticals, but yeah. I really needed that time with my wife, and my wife really needed that time with me. And I found out at noon on Saturday, so it eventually got to me.
Right.
And I think that's a case-by-case basis.
Sure.
You know, because talking with some friends, and one guy was like, well, a member committed suicide, and so we postponed our family vacation to do the funeral. Like, would you not do it then? It's like, well, yeah, in that situation, I would respond in that way. But the overarching premise is
right.
There are still times where I need to be away, and I need to be with my family, or I just need to be able to say no. And I think boundaries applies to all things. Mm-hmm. If somebody wants to talk to me about a sermon or a lesson, I encourage them to talk to me in my office, like to set up an appointment,
mm-hmm.
because I'm, particularly on Sundays, I'm not at a place where I can really process what they're going to say because I'm tired or I'm focused on my next thing.
Right.
And I think a lot of times people want to talk to the preacher when they're mad and their emotions are running high.
Right.
And so they really haven't had a chance to process themselves. And so by saying, okay, I want to talk with you, I want to hear what you have to say, set up an appointment, it gives them the freedom to calm down and to really reflect. And maybe that actually works in the negative, because then they stew. But if anything, it helps me be in a place where I'm not exhausted, where I am prepared to listen. I don't feel ambushed, so I don't get defensive.
Right.
And can really say. Yeah. Boundaries across the board, man.
Yeah. Yeah, whew, that's good. Well, okay, so I can riff off of that a little bit. We got to have rhythms. I'm a
yours. It's your number one.
This is going to be my first one. I don't know that I have them in any order, but rhythm. Although that it may be number one. Yeah, you know, so rhythm is just like regular things that we do. To block out time and space for the most important things. And so that, you know, I'm a huge fan of practicing a regular Sabbath. You know, I've done that better in different seasons of life. So I had a season where I was working full time, going to graduate school, and serving in a local church in a volunteer capacity. And even though it was a pretty awful, you know, schedule with this this job in retail and stuff like that, I made sure that I always had Sundays off. And the church that I was a part of was very community-oriented. We spent a lot of time just hanging out together. And church didn't start till 11 on Sundays. So let me... It was amazing. On a typical Saturday night, I would get off work. I would go meet some friends often from church and hang out and have a fun night and sleep in and not feel guilty and roll over to church somewhere around 11. We have a long gathering because we have big coffee breaks and things like that. Do weekly communion, things like that. So it's really long, and then we always go to lunch. So generally, I would be in this kind of spiritual and community setting for about till about 3 or 4 o'clock, and then go home and take an after lunch nap, and then roll out of bed, and you know, maybe watch a movie with the roommates or make dinner with some other people. And man, that was rich. It was a really hard season. But I always fought to keep that Sunday free, and was really glad I did. Right now, not doing as well. And I know that different people who are listening may or may not be able to do that. And so I would say that, like, man, number one, if you can keep a Sabbath, that just puts so many other things in place. It forces you to put other things in place, but other things as well. So, you know, everybody's got their – I don't want to be that, like – stereotypical evangelical telling you to have a quiet time. But man, if you can get up before everybody else and have a few minutes of quiet, it really does really does kind of set the pace for the rest of my day when I can do that. I'm in a weird situation where, because I do freelance communications for a couple of organizations, and then I do the church stuff. So I have no one telling me to be at any point of my day ever, unless I have a meeting scheduled. And I was losing it. So I joined this gym that does everything in classes, and I signed up to go to class on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So I have to be there. I'm paying way too much money to be there Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8 o'clock. And what that means is the night before, I'm packing a bag, I'm sleeping in my gym shorts. So I'm ready to go. I'm up early. I have to be up early enough to have a good breakfast before I get there, or I feel like crap all day. And then I go, and then I go from there to, you know, wherever I'm going to be working for the day. And so I kind of forced that into my life, and that, cause it seemed like a good idea, like, oh, I need rhythm. And I didn't really notice it, making a difference until a couple of weeks ago, when I overdid it at the gym and strained my back, and I couldn't go in for about 6 weeks. And those 6 weeks, I like did not know what to do with myself. I didn't like, I was like sleeping in and leaving my laptop in the room so I could just kind of like roll over and work in bed, which, and then, you know, I'm working less and less and like going all day without showering and stuff like that. So it definitely, I could tell a difference when I wasn't doing it. And so
six, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, this is actually when that this beard happened. I wish I could find the quote. Maybe one of our listeners can find the quote, but there's like, Rick Warren has some quote about, I feel weird quoting Rick Warren, but he's got something about, you know, we need a divert daily and Sabbath weekly and retreat monthly and vacation yearly or something like that. I really like that. Just saying, okay, on a regular basis, I'm going to block this time out. So my thing is, have a rhythm. It doesn't matter so much what the rhythm is. It should have, time set aside for focused on, your relationship with God and your relationship with others and self-care. But, if you have a rhythm, those things start to kind of fall into place.
And I like the language that you used. You fight for a set.
Yeah.
Because these things, hold on, let me hang up on this person. These things don't just happen. They don't make themselves happen.
Right.
And you have to be, particularly in ministry where, you know, what we do is kind of an abstract concept. Like it's hard.
Oh, yeah.
There's no sets every day, or every week. There are some things that are set, but there's a lot of openness to our lives. So it can be very easy to become addicted to who we are, what we're doing.
Yeah.
So I'll springboard off of that.
Okay.
And, what I'll call pursue a healthy lifestyle.
Okay.
And, in two ways, exercise and sleep.
Okay.
So someone was telling me that ministers are most likely to have a heart attack Sunday evening or Monday.
What does that mean?
Sunday is a day of stress,
right,
for ministers at
right.
least. And I've just found in my life, when I'm able to go to the gym and kind of work out that stress, that has helped me a lot. I used to ride my bike with some other members of church, and we would go out and we'd ride, 20, 30 miles.
And so
I would go pedaling, and I would get sweaty, and I would be wearing those bike outfits that, make my butt look nice.
So good.
And I miss that feeling.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to do it since I broke my foot, like 4 years ago. But I miss that. And I still go to the gym, and I still really enjoy lifting and enjoy just kind of physically doing something. And that helps me, that gives me more energy. That helps me focus more. There's lots of good reasons to have, exercise in your life. And sleep is something that I've been really reflecting on.
Yeah.
In light of some things that have been happening just in my own life, that people who don't sleep enough, they, you know, you have trouble focusing, it puts you in a bad mood, just all kinds of things. And ministers in particular have the, you know, you have that chance where you're not going to get enough sleep that night. You're going to be up late talking to a parishioner, or if you're a youth minister, you're going to have kids that you want to hang out with till all hours of the night because you apparently still think that it's 1990s and that's how we do youth ministers. Not that we shouldn't have some late night hangouts, but it shouldn't be that should definitely not be the norm anymore. And you kill your body, you know, and that's not okay. That's not healthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think God wants us, it's like what Paul says, I want to run the race and win the prize and not, I'm butchering this passage, but help others get there while I myself am getting there as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't think that's selfish. I think that's just wise.
Yeah.
So have a healthy lifestyle. Watch what you eat. Mm-hmm. Maybe you shouldn't drink, you know, 4 Mountain Dews a day, Kyle. Maybe, you know, maybe you drink water every now and then. I don't know. Let's just throw that one out there. We need to be better taking care of the machine that God gave us to work with.
Yeah. I love that sleep, man. I posted on Facebook today. Because I've been trying harder since my work is so open schedule to take naps, which are really hard for me. Like I have a hard time winding down in the middle of the day to do something like that. But I did it today. I took a 20-minute nap and I sat up and all the things I was freaking out about, like just, it didn't bother me as much. And I actually commented on Facebook. I said, you know, there's nothing in this world, you know, no matter how big your problem is, that doesn't seem smaller after a nap. And it's just like, man, it's so good. So good to just pull back, relax, and take care of yourself. And God's still there. The world's still there. The problem's still there. But you're able to face it with a little more. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, okay. So the next one I will say, I'll kind of change gears here a little bit. I would say that one of the main things that's really helped me over the years is to have a few go-to resources that are just always, always going to be encouraging to me. And I think I mentioned this on our Top Books podcast, but like, for instance, I try to read a Dallas Willard book, or generally reread Divine Conspiracy, but read a Dallas Willard book, or an M. Scott Peck book about once a year. There are a few speakers who I'll re-listen to old podcasts. Man, I've even found, like, going back, this is going to make me sound so old, but going back and listening to some of the music that inspired me in the 90s. Like, I was at a place today that had, like the good music of the 90s playing. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I brought back some old energy. But just having some things that you can trust, because it kind of keeps you from getting stuck in the whatever whim is popular in church culture in that moment. And it kind of grounds me. When I first read Divine Conspiracy, that shaped my nature of thinking of the kingdom and how I want to read the Bible. And coming back to that, it's really encouraging again and again, because it is something that you can forget about. And it's kind of like having a trusted friend. I mean, honestly, like, I could meet cool new people every day, but there are conversations that I can only have with someone like you or Paul Cartwright or something like that. And I think that we can treat, like, resources, books and podcasts and movies that way too. Have some things that we know will always benefit from.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Paul Cartwright, man, he got like 3 references in this podcast.
So far.
I think the next one that's important for me is, and this is something that's pretty recent, but have friends in your church community.
Mm.
Most of my friends are ministers, and they are at other churches. They're all local. Well, a lot of them are. I have a lot of local minister friends. But over the last couple of years, I have developed friendships within my congregation.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that, I think, is a stage of life. There aren't a lot of people in my church who were 23 when I was 23.
Right.
But it's I've got a couple of people who I can talk with about life who are a part of the church. And they're trusted, and they listen. And it's really great to come to church on Sunday mornings and not wonder if people are my friend because I'm the minister, but to know that they're my friend because they're my friend. And I can't hear you, Chris. Did you cut out?
Oh, my bad. Yeah. Yeah, no, I was just agreeing. That's that shouldn't be so hard.
Yeah, it I get why it's difficult for some. For me, I'm wired to be, I hope, I'd mm-hmm. like to think I'm wired to be authentic.
Yeah.
It's nice when people accept me for me.
Mm-hmm.
And they challenge me and they push me and they cause me to grow. So it's not like that, you know, somewhat adolescent, like, this is who I am, deal with it. You know,
right.
And I love me. I hope you love me too. And I'm my understanding of identity is a very fluid thing.
Yeah.
I'm always inviting conversation into my life, but it's just so hard for a couple of years where church is just your job.
Right.
And it's not really your community.
Right.
And now church is my community. And it's also my job.
Yeah. I have a mentor who likes to say that, you know, we pay pastors so that they can be available rather than we pay pastors to do certain things. Like, the church needs these things to happen, so we're going to pay someone to give them mm-hmm. the availability and capacity to do that. And that's helped me a lot. But I think, yeah, I think it's sad that it is so hard. And I think every church screws this up in different ways. Like in some churches, you'll have this more priestly relationship where this person is different than the rest of us, you know. In some churches, it's more authoritarian. And so you can't be friends with this person because they're, you know, your spiritual authority. And then in some churches, it's more of a, I don't want to use the wrong word here. You're an employee. There's, it's easy to look down on employees, like, well, I'm paying you to do this or that. And I'm glad that you found that. Honestly, I haven't seen a lot of people who have found that just being the person who is paid to be available, but is unequal. That's hard to find. But it is, you know, these are the people that we want to do life with. These are our chosen family. And so I would hope that we like each other.
Yeah, I would hope so. And that's, you know, and it's kind of, you know, when people find out you're a minister, they get this kind of look in their eye, like, oh, I have to be on my best behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more we work to help people see that ministers want to be your friends with no pretense, that I'm not your friend because you're at my church. I'm not your friend because I want you to follow Jesus. I'm your friend because, well, you know, what makes friendship? I don't know, but
right.
I'm your friend. And there's no ulterior motive.
Right.
Of course we want people to follow Jesus, but I'm not going to use my friendship to trick you into that. Like, I'm not manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very cliche, shallow understanding of ministers anyway, that you could say is, you know, hampered on by certain ideologies just because that's their experience, but that's not everybody's experience, and hopefully that's not the experience people have when they see me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, so going along those lines, one of mine is that you have to find your tribe.
Mm.
So here's what I mean by that. Your tribe is not necessarily the church that you're currently a part of in this moment. Your tribe is not necessarily the tradition you came up in. I find it one of the things that's helped me the most is being in a church that and a group, or just in general, being with people with whom I can be honest. And so, for instance, I spent a couple of years working for a church that had some basic assumptions that I felt were incongruous with the gospel. There were some really basic things about this church that I did not think Jesus would agree with, but they were paying me.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah, well, you know, when I took the job, I was really hungry. And I thought that, like, you know, there's unity in Christ and we can work around it. And I just found myself feeling really dishonest all of the time. And so when I, you know, left that job and worked in a secular job for a few years, I really pulled back and said, okay, where do I belong? What would it look like to be a part of a group of people that's honest? And, you know, I'm doing the grad school thing and, reading a lot of things and started, encountering, some other people who had the same influences and the same hopes that I did, the same vision of what the church could be. And so I've gone out of my way for the last 5 years or so to once or twice a year, make sure I have some time with like-minded people. And I'm not talking about like staying in a echo chamber. I'm saying having a reprieve occasionally from having to either feel like you're lying or feeling like you have to explain yourself. Sometimes you're not dishonest, but you don't share everything, and that's okay. Sometimes you have to stand up for what you believe. But you can't do that all day long without it really wearing you down. You need a safe place to go. So I'm really happy with the fact that I've found some like-minded people, and I see them once or twice a year, and we interact online, and it's kind of like church camp. How much I loved church camp as a kid, and now I have this grown-up church camp that I go to, full of like-minded people who are doing mission and ministry all across the world, and man, it is so good because I know we've read the same books that we can talk about, or we're struggling with similar things that we can talk about, and they're not going to look at me weird for saying those things. So, yeah, I don't think that if I were still in one of those places where I felt like I had to put up a false pretense all the time, I don't think I could keep up with it forever. So I would highly encourage people to not expect that from the local church, because the local church is a messy thing that's always in progress.
Yeah.
But do try to find, you know, some places, some people, a tribe that you can be yourself around.
Yeah. Authentic community.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for me, and this one kind of goes back to some topics that we touched on earlier, my next idea is that everybody needs a hobby. Being a workaholic,
yeah,
even in the name of God, you're still being a workaholic. Mm. And workaholics, I honestly think even ministers who say they're doing things in the name of God, if you're a workaholic, you're not doing it for your higher power. You're doing it for yourself.
Right. And you're not, no one's buying it.
Well, maybe some people are buying it, but I don't think you can forever, you can't keep going.
Yeah.
You eventually will crash.
Yeah.
And I went through a period of my time where I had comic books, and mm-hmm. I would read comic books, and that's how I kind of disengaged from work. Mm-hmm. It was nice. Relax and read about Spider-Man or Thor or Batman and Superman. Mm-hmm. There's a delightful Captain Marvel series where Captain Marvel became omniscient.
Ooh.
And he kind of went insane over it. So it was really cool. Really cool. But then I stopped reading comic books because I couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, then I didn't have a hobby. Like, I have nothing. outside of church to talk. And even now my hobby is playing World of Warcraft, which I started up because it's the 10-year anniversary, and I'm a video game nerd at heart, and that's just who I am true to myself. But I think we all need hobbies. We need different ways of engaging life that aren't our jobs.
Yeah.
We need to be able to relax. We need to be able to disengage. We need to rest. It's like what you were saying earlier. And it's good to be passionate about your job. It's good to love ministry. It's good to work for the kingdom. But sometimes working for the kingdom is resting.
Yeah.
And it's regaining energy so that you can get up the next day and run as hard as you can.
Well, and it's just, man, there's so many elements to it. Like, there are so many different problems that I would say get a hobby is the answer for. Like, yeah. It is part of the answer right now for what you mentioned earlier with boundaries. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot easier to turn someone down or turn something down when you have something else to do. I think it's the answer for the problem of pastors and preachers that don't have any non-Christian friends. I think having a hobby is a huge part of that. I mean, it's just the answer to so many things. The church that I came out of, the one that helped plant Mustard Seed where I'm at now, I really learned this lesson from the pastor there. He's a photographer and a cyclist. And he's, you know, in his early 40s and took up cycling in his late 30s. So, you know, 38-year-old father of two is, you know, figuring out how to race. And now he was just in a cyclocross race this weekend, which are these crazy outdoor extreme races. It was a 42-year-old dad. And he has this really meaningful friend group that's not involved with the church. And he's in those places, and he's still himself. But I do think, like, I look at that as one of the healthier churches that I've been around, and I really can't help but think that that has a big part to do with the fact that he has a hobby, that he's a fully formed human being, and the guy likes, you know, reading books about theology and doing church stuff, but he also likes riding his bike. There are more bike analogies on those Sunday sermons than anywhere else I can imagine. But, yeah, it's huge. It's huge. I don't know why. That's another one where I'm like, it shouldn't be this hard, but it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, like you were saying, the pursuit is to be a fully realized human.
Right.
And, man, what's the point of life if there's no joy?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So along those lines, I'll throw one out there that isn't super specific, but I would just say try something new on a regular basis. Like, challenge yourself to do something you've never done before. And it doesn't really matter what it is, but just that. So, you know, the way that our brains work from the best we know is that it's kind of like a well-trod path. You know, if you take the same path, if you're driving the same commute every day, every day, every day, you can kind of just shut your brain down and you know, wander, but not really learn anything new about the surrounding area. And our brains are the same way. And so if we, you know, if we eat the same thing and watch the same TV shows and party with the same people and read the same theologians, then we're going to kind of get boring. Parts of our brains are going to die because they're not being engaged. And there's also just there's something to, when you accomplish something you've never done before, that kind of opens the floodgates of, helps you realize what you're capable of. So here's the example I'm thinking of. So I ran a marathon about 5 years ago, and I'm not a marathoner. I had never done anything athletic before that in my life, and I haven't done anything on that level since then. But it did completely change how I thought about the world. I did it, honestly, because I was unemployed at the time and had some time to kill, and I was kind of depressed. So I was like, so it wasn't like I set out to do that. But here's what happened. in order to train for a marathon, you have to really get up to where you're running 20 to 50 miles a week. And in order to make time to run 20 or 50 miles a week, you have to have a schedule. And if you're going to suddenly shove in 1 to 2 hours of running, you know, cleanup and eating enough, then you've suddenly got this enforced rhythm on your life. And what's fascinating to me is when I finished doing the marathon, I wasn't so much proud of having finished the marathon. I was proud of all of the work that I did to get to the marathon. And I really started thinking more about, okay, what are the other things in my life that I can organize around a big goal and then back up and kind of create a plan to accomplish? I enrolled in graduate school and finally finished my graduate school with that mindset. I tackled some reading projects and some personal writing projects and some things I wanted to do and started kind of coming up with a schedule. And that all was because I tried something new. I had never done anything athletic in my life. I was super scared of it. But now I kind of have a experience doing that. So I can... Yep. I can travel somewhere new a lot easier than I would have before. I cooked a crazy pot roast meal the other day that was intimidating, but I feel like, honestly, I can do new things easier because I did one new big thing.
Yeah. And maybe that's going to be – this is how I'll sum up my final point. Embrace growth.
Yeah.
You know, just – I know too many ministers who seem really unhappy, and maybe it's because they just stopped growing, and they fell into a rhythm that they never thought about changing,
mm-hmm.
and they got unhappy by it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are always growing. We are always taking in new ideas and new views of life.
Mm.
And I don't ever want to stop doing that. I don't ever want to stop at least considering new ways of being and new ideas. And whether they're true or not, it's enjoyable to read through them,
mm-hmm.
and to process them and to recognize that I've always got something to grow into, that Christ is always forming in me.
Yeah. Yeah. That forming word is so great. I think that so many approaches to faith are, or I won't say faith, so many approaches to religious life are about having a list of things that you do right.
Yeah.
But, you know, Scripture says Christ is being formed in you. I have a friend who's a professional potter, and I would just go and hang out and watch him at the wheel, you know, and there's a reason that this metaphor is in Scripture. Because you're constantly shaping it, and you're never really finished. You just have to stop at some point. And and the Christ is being formed in us. You know, we're constantly being shaped.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so I'll throw one last one in. If I had to rate one, this would be my number one. And I'm grouping together three things that I think are kind of on a spectrum. And that's therapy, counseling, and spiritual direction. Anybody who's spent time around me in the last 10 years knows that I love therapy, and I'll probably talk about that in the first like day that I've met you, because I really, I needed people outside of myself to help me understand why I was hurting. My real quick story with that is that when I was 22, I went through a church planning assessment, and the organization that ran it at the end of it told me, "Chris, we like you, but you're really broken." And I was like, "What do you mean?" And they actually called a counselor and got me into counseling. I was able to, they made it so that I could afford it, which was a big deal at the time.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I had really had a place where I could was forced to talk about some things. And, you know, I think, Kyle, you've known me long enough and you've seen me in some, like, pretty dark, like, seasons of depression, a lot of confusion with, like, just life stuff and not really feeling equipped to handle it. And so that was a huge thing. So the therapy was the more like big picture addressing specific life issues. Counseling, I think, I view counseling as the gym for your heart. That you have, that healthy people go to the gym, and people with healthy hearts and minds go to counseling. Not necessarily all your life. You're not gonna, you're not like a Woody Allen who spends his, once or twice a week on the couch his entire life. But I'd say having, checking in on a regular basis, is important. And then, thirdly, I do kind of want to separate it, because it's something different, is spiritual direction. Mm-hmm. And spiritual direction is something that I'm not crazy familiar with, so I don't want to go too far into describing it, but I guess I would call it like the process of kind of joining with other people to listen to God and trusting someone else's capacity to listen, trusting their capacity to help you listen to God. And I've got a spiritual director here in Austin that I work with that I see about once every couple of months. Mm-hmm. And he comes from a Quaker background, so we spend a lot of time in silence and then ask, how's your heart doing? And try to kind of trace back what's going on and name things for what they really are, and listen to God in that. The first time I did spiritual direction, I went to a Catholic convent in Houston, and I was paired with this like 89-year-old super frail Algerian nun. So she's this tiny old woman with this French accent, and she sat me down, and I was in a big transition and not sure what to do with my life, and I poured out all of this for her. And I'm not going to try to do a French accent or an old lady voice, but she basically, after hearing me pour my heart out, she said, "Yeah, that's hard. Do you know the story of Joshua?" I was like, "Yeah." And she said, "Be strong and courageous and do not be afraid." And then she sent me off to spend 2 days in silence with just that word. She said, "Don't take your Bible, don't take your journal. Just think about be strong and courageous and do not be afraid for 2 days."
Okay.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
It was a lot, but something about hearing it from an 89-year-old tiny little French Algerian who spent her entire life in places of quiet and prayer. And that was, it was powerful. And so I really don't know where spiritual direction fits into our lives, but I am more and more, I think we need more submission in our lives. I think we need people that we can trust for their opinion and have relationships where we listen to God together. And I want more of that. And I think I'm prepared for that now because I had a lot of therapy and counseling. I don't know that, 22-year-old super broken Chris would have known what to do with that, some of that stuff. But so I would just recommend, anybody who can find a spiritual, and it doesn't have to mean you go off to a monastery, or you hang out on a Quaker commune. I think it just means you have relationships that are with people that you trust that are dedicated to listening to God together.
Agreed.
You got anything else?
No, I think we covered all of my list.
Yeah. Why don't you go through your list again real quick, just to remind us?
Okay. I scratched through all of them, so now I have to reread them. I can't read this. Set boundaries.
Set boundaries.
Pursue a healthy lifestyle. Have a hobby. And have real friends in your church community. And there's another one that I kind of added at the end there, but I I think I was just kind of spitballing. Oh, that's right. Never stop growing.
Never stop growing. Yeah. I said have a few go-to resources. Find your tribe. Set some rhythms. Try something new. And get therapy, counseling, and spiritual direction. So that's what's helped us. And I think I just add here at the end that, like, I don't think that I've got this figured out yet. And I have a lot of areas to grow. I'd say right now this is one of the seasons where I've struggled with it more. And so this conversation is actually encouraging for me to kind of take some of my own medicine and go back and think about what I can do to be fed myself. And just kind of just always going back to Jesus. Always creating time and space to go back to Jesus.
Yeah.
That's all I got. So I guess that's all we have this week for tear gas and gumdrops. We didn't give any listener feedback, but that's other than our review from Paul Cartwright on iTunes. So that's really great. If you guys enjoy the show, then you can go on iTunes, give us a review, subscribe, and you'll get it right in your iTunes as soon as the next episode comes out. Give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy of that, and that'll help get the word out to other people. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and even subscribe to a newsletter that maybe we'll send out here shortly.
And remember, every time you like our podcast, a paraplegic puppy gets a little bit more feeling in its feet.
I feel like we have to sing the song now. The teardrops, or tear gas on roses.
Oh, yeah, what was it? Gas on roses and gumdrops on... Hang over. That's who we are. All right, you all guys right. Have a great day.
See you next time. I hear you next time.
Thanks we'll for us next time.
Next time.
Next time.
Next time.
Cool.